This is Politics on Parade here on The Jeff Booth Show, brought to you by the Center for Sexual Expression and Education and Erotic University. Missouri Republicans really, really, really wanted to enact a 72-hour abortion waiting period, and they did. Even though the Democratic Governor Jay Nixon vetoed the legislation, Missouri lawmakers just overrode his veto. That's 72-hour waiting period. Even if you're a victim of rape, even if you're a victim of incest. According to a public policy polling survey, 8 out of 10 Missourians don't like the 72-hour waiting period because they are concerned that it intrudes on women's private medical decisions. The majority of people in Missouri agreed with the governor's decision to veto it, and yet it was passed nonetheless. And Republican lawmakers are not oblivious to the cruelty of a bill like this. They just don't care. While it's true that Utah and South Dakota are the only other two states that have this 72-hour waiting period, Missouri stands alone as the only one that offers no other option for victims of rape and incest. And it's even worse, because they don't count weekends or holidays. So the waiting period can be even longer. The Republicans insist there is no war on women, but it reminds me of the movie Mars Attacks, where the Martians are shooting ray guns at everybody and saying, "We come in peace." Republicans desperately want to convince women that they are not anti-women. Polling shows that they are failing. There was a poll done just August 27th. It was commissioned by two major Republican groups, one backed by Karl Rove. And it shows that things are not looking good when it comes to women and the Republican Party. A majority of women find the Republican Party intolerant and stuck in the past. A majority of women think that Republicans fail to speak to women in the different circumstances in which they live. They have huge problems with their anti-birth control stance. So they're trying very, very desperately to convince women that they are not, in fact, anti-birth control. And they've been warned. Careful how you handle this. The group doing the warning? The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They're the advocacy arm of the largest group of OBGYNs in the country. Republicans have been saying lately, yes, yes, we do support birth control. In fact, we support making it available over the counter. The problem with that is when you make drugs available over the counter, they are not necessarily less expensive, but they are typically no longer covered by insurance. So this move that they're promoting has the potential of making contraception even less available and more expensive to women. The only women this would help is women without insurance, who would have the benefit of not having to go to a doctor. Women with insurance, however, would be covered by this, and, under the law now, their birth control is free, doesn't cost them anything. Women with insurance under this Republican plan, unless there were some things altered to it, to ensure that birth control still remains free, then for the majority of women, birth control would be more expensive than it is now. Yes, making birth control available over the counter would make it more generally available, but that's not really the problem. The real problem is the cost of it. Right now, we've got a solution for the cost. Republicans would take that away. And we're really only talking about the birth control pill. This would not have any impact on what's currently the most effective form of contraception, which is the intrauterine device. And you have to go to the doctor for that. But if Republicans have their way, if they get what they want, that going to the doctor is going to be more expensive for women. And the cost of that device is going to be more expensive for women. The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is warning Republicans, we're not going to let you hoodwink American women with this. We're watching you and we're going to speak out unless you do better. I seriously don't think that on this issue, they are going to do better. They are trapped by the far, far, far conservative right of their party, primarily the religious right. That's the religious right that keeps going to court, and there are literally hundreds of lawsuits out there, to try to stop women from getting free birth control. And here's a fun little fact. Most of the challengers of the birth control benefit don't offer parental leave either. In no way, shape, or form are they pro-women in any conceivable way. And it's reached a point of extremism that has become ludicrous. The Supreme Court's decision in the Hobby Lobby case was ludicrous. It's ridiculous. But they did sort of give the administration a way out. All you have to do is come up with a procedure that is acceptable to the court and does not conflict with the court's bizarre view of corporate personhood and corporate religious identity. So the Obama administration did what the court told it to do. They came up with a fix using the guidance from the Supreme Court. And as is expected, the religious extremist businesses, the nonprofits that are suing, are so far rejecting Obama's solution. The only thing they will accept is to be treated as a house of worship and exempted entirely from complying with the rule. That is not a solution that the Supreme Court has mentioned. The only thing they will accept is that the women who work for them don't get birth control. That's an extremist and medieval view. There are 40 cases right now from nonprofits working their way through the courts. It will inevitably find its way back to the Supreme Court. And what they will do is anyone's guess. Speaking of the Supreme Court, they have added the issue of gay marriage to their agenda for their closed-door conference, which takes place on September 29th. Now, what that means is that they're going to discuss the issue and whether they're going to take it up or not. Not that they're specifically going to take it up. They've been trying to avoid this for a long time, but they've got appeals from Indiana and Oklahoma and Utah and Virginia and Wisconsin, and they really just can't ignore the issue anymore. Technically, they could put off deciding whether to deal with the issue all the way until January. But does it really make any sense? This is inevitable. They're going to have to sit down and deal with it. We spoke too soon. On Monday, we reported that the Catholic League, or at least their president, Bill Donahue, which is basically the Catholic League, was okay with the decision to allow a gay group to march in New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade. Yes, he did make some snide and kind of disgusting anti-gay remarks, but still he said he was okay with it. That didn't last very long. Now he is going to pull the Catholic League from the St. Patrick's Day parade, which, woohoo! Do we really need this kind of a hate group marching in the parade? No, it'll be a better parade with them not there. This will be the first time that his group has not marched in the parade in 20 years. I should have known better. He had his little snitty fit, primarily because there isn't a pro-life group marching in the parade. Well, no pro-life group applied to march in the parade, and it closed it down, but that would be open next year. Donahue says that he's not pulling out because of his animus against gays, but I don't think that would be the first time he's stretched the truth a wee bit. The truth is, the parade will be much better with gay people and no Bill Donahue. James Richardson was a former GOP spokesman. He worked as an advisor for the Republican National Committee, and he worked for Governors Haley Barbour and John Huntsman. He came out as gay last week. He said he felt forced to out himself. He said, "For my admission here, I will alienate friends whose faiths regard my sexuality as culturally corrosive. I'll suffer the snickering of those across the aisle whose politics regard my own as personally injurious. And conservative clients may regard me as a liability. After all, the tide is not as unidirectional as people say." He is in total support of all equal rights measures for gay people, including adoption and marriage. Wendy Davis, the Texas senator running for governor of that state, revealed in her newly published memoir that she had to go through the process of terminating a pregnancy. The child was wanted, but had an acute brain abnormality. The doctors said that the syndrome would cause the baby to suffer and probably wouldn't live very long. So she made the difficult decision that she was going to terminate that pregnancy. This is actually her second abortion. She had also had an ectopic pregnancy. Now, there's no choice. It can kill you, and you're not going to have a baby from it. There were the expected responses from people on the anti-abortion side. For example, from Joe Posman, of course it's a guy, of the Texas Alliance for Life. His organization doesn't support abortions even in the case of devastating disability, even in the case of the child will die in pain. Here's what he said. She definitely experienced a loss of two children, and we are sympathetic to her for that. Okay, well. The position of our organization is that we do not favor and we don't recommend aborting a child who has a severe disability, the same as we can't recommend destroying a newborn child who has a severe disability. Both of them are children. It doesn't matter to extremists like him how much pain the child is in, or how short and agonizing their life may be. Rather than any sympathy for her case, the National Review simply called her a liar. They said her story was convenient and unverifiable. Republican strategist Matt McElwyack said that the campaign was using Davis's story to promote abortion, something he called sickening and subhuman. This is the kind of criticism Wendy Davis gets for abortions that were pretty much most reasonable people would say she really had no choice, that the humane thing to do is what she did. But, you know, I still see messages on the message boards calling her a baby killer. Imagine what they would be saying if she'd been 16 years old and decided that was the best thing to do. And finally, in Pennsylvania, court sentenced a woman named Jennifer Ann Whalen to between 9 and 18 months in prison. That's some hard time. What did she do? Well, she bought abortion-inducing pills online and gave them to her daughter who had gotten pregnant. You're supposed to have a doctor and a prescription for this, but she didn't have any. Abortion isn't exactly readily available for women in Pennsylvania. Around 87% of counties in Pennsylvania don't have a single abortion provider. This is what happens when you take abortion rights away from people. They find other solutions. Unfortunately, the state's response is to throw her in prison. More and more, we're seeing women's health care choices being criminalized. We're looking at women who may attempt an abortion on their own being charged with a crime. You're looking at women who might be on drugs, some of them that would absolutely have no impact on the child, but states that have these laws, they will arrest the pregnant woman and she can go to prison, even though there really was no threat to her unborn child. And as we get more and more of these laws, there's going to be more and more pressure to investigate every time a woman has a miscarriage. This is something that women should be very, very concerned about.